it's Sunday, then it's time for the Viv and Yaakov show. The only thing that matters now, hostages. That's it. We know that many have died in captivity, and that anyone who is still alive is certain to be in very rough shape, physically and mentally. Israel has not won this war. We lost on October 7th, when the country was invaded by Hamas and civilian murderers and looters, and they encountered little, if any, resistance. Civilians were slaughtered, tortured, and taken hostage. To this day, Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu has not taken responsibility for the horror, but he has pointedly blamed others for this incomprehensible failure on so many levels. We are now almost 7 months in. In spite of months of talk about entering Rafah to finish off Hamas, we seem to stumble along with no real strategy, and here we are, at the end of April, at the end of the Passover holiday, during which we celebrate our freedom, and we are tormented by videos of hostages released by Hamas during this holiday. Brilliant PR by Hamas. And Israelis, the vast majority just want this agony to end. They want the hostages, whoever remains alive, to come home. Why are they still there? Why have we not yet finished the job? Yaakov and I talk about the possibility of an imminent deal to free some of the hostages, which will also involve a one-year ceasefire between Israel and Hamas. And it only serves to highlight how egregiously the government of Israel has failed its citizens. There were two goals at the outset of this war: defang Gaza militarily and bring the hostages home. We have failed at both. I'm Vivian Berkovich, former Canadian ambassador to Israel, now living in the somewhat depressed state of Tel Aviv. Stay with us. Good morning, Yaakov, on this sunny Sunday. Are you feeling sunny today?
Sunny is not the word I would use to describe the feeling, but more apprehension of where things are going and what's next.
Let's just go. Tell me, why apprehension? Tell us.
I think the stakes are clear to anyone who's been watching carefully what's going on in Israel right now. We pretty much, since some people might say January, I would maybe be a bit more generous and say February, the war has pretty much ended in the high intensity conflict stage that we knew. And we've been waiting to see, are we going into Rafah? Are we not going into Rafah? There was the Khan Yunis operation that pretty much came to an end already weeks ago. And at the same time, so we have these two trains that are moving. One is, are we going into Rafah? The other one is the hostage deal. Is there going to be, is there not going to be? It's very difficult to know what's real and what's true. Are we the obstacle to the deal? Is Hamas the obstacle to the deal? But what we've seen over the last just few days is the Hamas is upping the pressure on Israel by releasing these hostage videos. First of Hirsch Goldberg Polin, the 23-year-old Israeli-American, left arm blown off, that clearly in the video, calling for a deal. Last night, a video of Keith Siegel and Omri Miron, again, pleading. And to watch Keith Siegel break down in the middle, talking about what it was last Passover to be with his family and this Passover not to, and hoping and praying for to be reunited ahead of the next holiday. We got to move here. The time is running out if it hasn't run out already. And the question is, what are we going to do? And it's clear that the government is facing a true dilemma because they're not able to make a decision. And I think that we see that, right? There's no movement towards Rafah. There's no movement, it doesn't seem, towards a deal. And we're stuck.
So those, of course, are the two issues that every Israeli is obsessed with right now, I think 24/7, and so intense. So let's focus a little more on both because they're linked, obviously. You said just now that the government's kind of stuck. They're having difficulty making a decision. I'm going to suggest that there's nothing new about that. That this government has had difficulty making decisions since October 7th and before October 7th. And I will be less kind than you, and I will suggest that part of the reason we found ourselves in the position we did on October 7th and thereafter is for exactly for that, that failure to decide, that failure to make decisions based on what is in citizens' best interest from a security perspective, as opposed to from a political interest. And this is a time to rise above the political interest. I'm sorry, I know they're politicians. This is, we are in such an extreme time in every possible way. From the outset, in my view, I'm also going to be less generous on this. I think we lost on October 7th. The second they took a single hostage, and then each hour that passed with no sign of the IDF or the government compounded that loss. And then that we didn't even react on the ground for 3 weeks was over. And that says to me, this government really did not prioritize the hostages from day one.
First of all, I think you're 100% right about your description of the loss. We went into this war losing. We lost already before the war even started, pretty much. The question was, could we gain back or regain some semblance of some victory or something that's not just weakening Hamas, but redefining and recreating a new security reality? One. Two, can we get back the hostages? And with 133 there, and depending on what report you read, how many are even alive? And Hamas claiming that they only know where about 20 of them are, and they don't know where the rest of them. So like the whole thing is just really so difficult to bear. But you are also 100% right, Vivi, and I totally agree with you about the hostages. I've seen more photos of President Biden with released hostages than I've seen of Prime Minister Netanyahu with released hostages. We're still in Passover, which is finally ending, but the Seder would have been a perfect opportunity for the Prime Minister to go to Hostage Square, to go have Seder with hostages, families, to go to the kibbutz, I don't know, something.
And you know what? Yeah, no, he did do something. You know what he did? He released a video about the anti-Semitic student riots and encampments on U.S. campuses. That was at the same time that the talk here was really heating up, right before the first Seder, right? About the hostages. And he didn't even address them. A group of hostage families went and demanded a meeting with the War Cabinet before the first Seder. It's beyond insensitive and callous. This is really, I don't want to say on air what I think this is. The hostages have been so pushed to the side, and now we find ourselves, frankly, I think Hamas is brilliant. They first released the Hirsch Goldberg polling video, and it was kind of in the same format as previous videos, a little schlocky, lowbrow manipulated aesthetic, getting them to read all these sort of really low-level accusations about Bibi and the government and Israel, and was what it was. But there's a huge difference between the Goldberg poll-in and the previous videos that we've seen over the last 6-7 months, and then the Keith Siegel and Omri Miran videos. Huge difference. They allowed Keith and Omri to at least appear to be speaking naturally.
Yeah,
you're a prisoner. Everything is coerced. They at least appeared to be speaking. They allowed Keith to break down on camera and showed it. They presented them as more real and less scripted.
And I totally agree. And I'll just say one thing.
It was very effective.
I think it has been effective because it tears our heart out. But the other thing, there's this whole thing going on in the media, which is just interesting in of itself. When the first video started to come out, the media self-censored and said, we won't play the psychological warfare, playing to the psychological warfare of Hamas. I had a difficulty with that decision from the get-go because I felt that, okay, yes, psychological warfare, but on the other hand, you're playing into the hands of a government that wants you to not remember that there are these hostages there. This is part of what's going on. So it's important, I think, that we actually, I don't need... Forget about what Hirsch Goldberg Poland was saying. Forget about what Keith Siegel is saying. It's just the image itself that's enough to get the blood boiling and to say, these are our people who are still being held almost 7 months later inside Gaza, and we're not close to getting them home. And that is something that you can't whitewash that. And that's important that we all remember. Now, that doesn't mean that you don't have to be in favor of going into Rafah. That doesn't mean that you don't have to still say, okay, there's a job to be done. There is. And I don't know how they walk that tightrope, but we can't pretend as if this is not an issue. It's a huge issue.
Huge issue. And you're absolutely right. every image of these people in captivity just tears the country apart. I can't imagine what it does to their families. But here we are. And we're getting just a tsunami of rumors and news reports. My daughter and I sat down last night trying to parse the reports on what the deal that's supposedly on the table, waiting for Sinwar to approve, what it actually means. It all depends on how you define this and that, right? How you define older, how you define injured, how you define so many things. We don't even have the names of the hostages who are alive. And so we just, and the ratio is, I think, 30 prisoners for every civilian released and 50 Palestinian prisoners for every Israeli soldier, male or female, who is released. Israel's agreed because this government really has no choice, in my view. If you look at it, you were just talking about Rafah. We've been talking about going in there for 3 or 4 months. Honestly, I don't think anyone cares anymore. I just don't. I think that people, they need and want this to end. They need and want the hostages home as a priority. And then we're going to see about if and what we do with Rafah. But if you look at the terms, if you look at the terms of this deal, the terms of this deal, which we know Hamas will violate, but part of it is a 1-year total ceasefire on both sides. And we still don't have all our hostages back. Now, how the hell is this government going to pull that off with Ben-Gurion and Smotrich inside?
That's exactly the dilemma that the prime minister has. And I want to get to the politics of it in a moment, but first let's just talk about the substance of it, right? Hamas is believed to have about 15,000 fighters armed in Rafah, right? They still have significant infrastructure there, about 4 to 5 standing battalions out of the 24 that they had in the outset of this war, most of which have not been, you can't say completely destroyed, but been broken, right, and splintered. So they still have their chain of command. They still have these battalions and they have these fighters. So if you don't go into Rafah, and by the way, there's also the Philadelphia corridor, that 14-kilometer strip of land between Gaza and Egypt, where they have tunnels that they can use to smuggle in weapons. So on the substantive level, there is a good argument to say, listen, Israel has to go in there and finish them off as much as possible. Now, there you come into a question of what's the best military way to do that? Does it have to be a large-scale offensive? Can it be airstrikes? Can it be pinpointed operations? Maybe you wait for the day after, and then you start to go in small, isolated operations. I put that aside, but we do still have an enemy that needs to be dealt with. The problem is that you have, and even one more comment before the politics again. Looking at the timeline, we've seen how after the first stage of the deal, when those 100 people pretty much were released, we were left with now what's 133 of these hostages now. There were a couple saved, 3 were rescued, there was the body that was recovered, et cetera, but now we're looking at 133. Now, every day that goes by, you have to assume that some of these people are suffering, dying, getting weaker, and the risk of life hovering over their head at all times.
Not to mention mental breakdowns, which I'm sure.
Of course, and sexual violence, and I mean, everything, everything. The timeline for an operation also in Rafah, in a big way, as what Israel's been talking about, it's an important point because what is the timeline? So the IDF estimates that it will take a couple of weeks to move out the vast majority of the people who are in Rafah. They've started erecting some of these tent camps further north on the outskirts of Khan Yunis. They would have to drop flyers. They'd have to push people out. They'd have to use other means. Okay, but the vast majority won't leave until the tanks start rolling in. And what the IDF will do is create like these corridors that people will be able to flee. Okay. But then how long is the operation itself? 3 weeks, a month, more? So basically what we're looking at in terms of a timeline is about 2 months. Will the hostages who are alive even survive those 2 months? So then the whole idea of, no, you need the military force and the threat of the operation to speed up the possibility of a deal to get back the hostages, unless you're planning to rescue them militarily, which we've seen we haven't been able to, who's going to be left in 2 months? So that's that. Now, going back to what you said about politics, 100%.
No, I want to jump okay. to substance before we get to politics. I think that from the outset, and this is really important, everybody had a different idea of what this war is about from the government, I think. Most Israelis did. And many Israelis were like, we have to get the hostages out. And Bibi was more on the, we have to destroy Hamas track, right? Didn't talk about the hostages much.
And then after they started to exert more pressure and publicly and their very effective global campaign, he kind of had to respond and he was shamed into it. And it took a few weeks. Well, yeah. Oh, yeah. We got to get the hostages out too. But it was clearly based on what the IDF did and how the government reacted, not a priority. It just wasn't. And I think I speak for a lot of people when I say that the fatigue is so intense and we've lost the war. We've lost Rafia. We have for now. Just need to get salvage as much as we can of our people and get them out, period. Because whatever deal we make is going to constrain us militarily. There's no question. They're talking about releasing the hostages. I think it's over a period of 10 weeks, something like that, which is beyond inhumane at this point. And so then assume that there's a ceasefire for a year. We know Hamas will break it. And then maybe the whole thing flares up again. Maybe Hamas won't break it. But in the meantime, we also have all of those people who live in the area around the Gaza Strip, all those kibbutzim that were displaced. And if we're left in this security limbo with Hamas intact and just building up, rebuilding its strength over a period of a 1 year ceasefire, like what happens to them? There's so much dereliction of duty on the part of this government that's below the headline. So the headline's always the hostages and Rafiah. But then there's all of this other really important stuff in Israel, and they're just not doing it. And I think, I sit here and I think, okay, anyone who's alive, let's get them out. Let's get out all the bodies. Let's, if it takes 1 month, 2 months, 3 months, and then let's have a freaking election and start cleaning up this mess.
What you're saying is, it sounds great in a laboratory, but
in real life, it doesn't work that way.
In the real life of as complicated Israeli politics, it doesn't work that way. And the reason is because we have leadership that does not believe that it is yet time for them to take responsibility, if at all, to take responsibility and to step down. I can tell you, you know, you come from a country, originally Canada, right? And I was talking with some other diplomats from other countries who after the war started, after October 7th, and they said to me, within a week, everybody would have stepped out, from the top military brass to the government. It would have been so quick, right?
Yeah.
We don't have that culture here, right? And I think that, unfortunately, what we find ourselves in, and you mentioned the Smotrich-Ben-Gvir duo, they are holding the keys to the government. And Netanyahu is afraid, to some extent, to proceed with the deal because of the prospect that they would pull out of the government, he'd lose his coalition. And by the way, there's all these unnamed people who are talking in the media of these sources who are involved in the hostage negotiations who say, last night there was a story on Ynet about how, quoting one of these officials, who claimed that in the private pre-cabinet discussions, and Netanyahu was very flexible, comes into the security cabinet where Smotrich and Ben-Gvir are and completely does a 180. It's not surprising that to some extent is the Netanyahu MO. There's a famous story that Meir Dagan, the late head of Mossad, used to tell, is that he would come to Jerusalem from Mossad headquarters outside of Tel Aviv, present an operation to Netanyahu, would get the approval, would then drive stop in Abu Ghosh, which is about 10, 15, 20 minutes outside of the city, sit down and have hummus and wait for the phone call to come back to the PMO. Because he knew it would come because the Netanyahu had now changed his mind about this operation. There's a lot of lore about these stories. But anyhow, the politics here are all over the place. And I wish they weren't, because they're getting in the way. There's no question.
Are you concerned with what is going on in Israel? This is not just another crisis. State of Tel Aviv is committed to delivering superb and candid analysis, and we're offering a limited-time subscription special, a 33% discount from the regular fee of $90 annually. 1 year for only $60. Stay informed and stay connected with State of Tel Aviv. We are a reader-supported enterprise. If you value our work, please subscribe. It makes a huge difference. stateoftelaviv.com. All one word. Now, back to the podcast.
I want to just, because I think that many listeners and people out there may not have had the exposure closer up than we have. Many people seem to think that Netanyahu is very decisive. He's strong. And because that's what he projects. He's extremely articulate, speaks beautifully, forcefully, and you know, he's got that great voice. But the fact is, he is notoriously indecisive. And as Yaakov, as you said, there are so many stories of him going through all these decisions painfully by detail, as he should. And then in the middle of the night, calling everyone back and saying, all right, let's do this one more time. So that a decision never, almost never gets made. But I just think that this time, you're right, they're not taking responsibility. I don't see how they continue not taking responsibility. I just, how they continue to pretend that they don't have to go back to the electorate after this unprecedented disaster.
It will be very hard for the, let's play out the scenario. If the war ends with, let's say there's a hostage deal, which will require the IDF to withdraw from Gaza and will require basically a cessation of hostilities for a period of time with a commitment that Israel won't attack anyone. Hostages come back, war ends, rehabilitation of Gaza begins. At the same time, Hezbollah will likely stop what it's been doing, its aggression in the north. Now, will there be a deal in place? Will there not be a deal in place? It doesn't look like there's a deal right now for Hezbollah to move up north. So what would likely happen is the IDF will bolster in a significant way its presence along the border in the north. And you'll have in every community that's on the border, probably what we would say in Hebrew, pluga, like a company of soldiers will be stationed there. So in Shtula and Avivim and Malkiah and all these places, Metula, Shlomi, of course, you'll have soldiers stationed to protect them, right? And that will give people the feeling, okay, we can now return home. They have
to
go through.
Do you think so? Metula's destroyed.
Right, no, I was just about to say they will have to go through rehabilitation and reconstruction as well because Metula and some of these communities are completely destroyed. So that will we will end enter into a phase of post-war to some extent, rebuilding. No one's going to want to go back to a war. Summer around the corner, September 1st looming on the horizon, beginning of a new school year. You want your people in the north to be able to send their kids to schools in the north. People will start to go back home. And then what are you going to do? You're going to restart the war. So what's more going to happen is the war is going to shift from Gaza and Lebanon to the Knesset. And that's where Benny Gantz and Gadi Eisenkot will pull out of the government. Calls for elections will begin. And Netanyahu's big challenge, Vivian, is going to be, can he make it through the summer session of the Knesset? It's going to start in the middle of May, towards the end of May. Will he be able to make it? It's not long. It's 5-6 weeks. Can he make it through that summer session, or is the Knesset going to disperse on its own? If he could pull through, he's good to go into 2025. If it falls apart in the summer session, we're going to have elections in September, October, November.
In the meantime, you have all of your plugot, the brigades, right? A pluga?
A pluga is a company.
A company. All your companies protecting towns and settlements. When I say settlements, it's not in the way that they do on Columbia University campus. It's in terms of
communities,
kibbutzim, moshavim, smaller communities that are up north. What about in the Otef? Are we going to have companies protecting every community there? Or are we just
there? Listen, there the reality has significantly changed, right? The IDF has raised a lot of those areas that were close to the border that could serve as launching pads for attacks. You'll have bolstered security, much more soldiers along the border. If there are positions that have been established still inside Gaza. Will those be maintained or not? Will depend on the conditions of whatever ceasefire goes into effect. Their security has changed to a large extent. Hamas still stands, and we saw what happened. When Israel leaves Beit Lahia, they can fire a rocket into Ashkelon. So this is not over. Hamas has not disappeared. This fighting will have to continue just at a different intensity than before.
So that means that the kibbutzim along the Otef, the ones that were attacked and where people are starting to trickle back, they'll remain within firing range.
They will remain within, they will remain within definite firing range. Question whether they have any more of the longer range rockets to put your home in Tel Aviv in range or mine in Jerusalem. But
I'm moving to the south soon.
That's true. That's right.
Yeah.
So you'll be in firing range.
I will, but not the short range as much. They never seem to reach there. But I have to say, I'm looking at different security things that I never thought I would think about in my life. But what I've heard is that there are people, a lot of workers, that the people who actually run the factories, and they're back planting their crops, they're maintaining their orchards, they're running the kibbutz businesses. And some of the old timers have returned back. But the people with young children, they're saying, no, there's no way. Most of them, I think, won't go back. And even the few that are considering it, they won't go back until they feel they are living in a hermetically sealed environment from a security perspective.
Yeah, but sadly,
which they thought they had. I know.
There's no such thing in this country.
All right. So we sit, we wait, we see what King Sinwar says with respect
to the situation. We eat a little more matzah.
Need a little more matzah. One thing before I let you go is we've been hearing about this buildup of tension between the Qataris and Hamas. It's come and gone. And then there was the, oh, maybe they're looking for a new place to hang out and to set up a home base. Maybe it's Oman. Maybe it's Turkey. Maybe it's Kuwait. That seems to have died down. And they're staying for now. In Doha, Qatar is the financial lifeline for Hamas. Right? And diplomatic support. And America's big, strong, staunch, steadfast ally in the region. It's all so crazy. But it seems to me that America must have been putting quite strong pressure on Qatar in these last few weeks to just get this done with the hostages.
Look, I have no doubt that's what's happening. And by the way, I think it's not coincidence that in the two videos that have been released by Hamas, one is Hirsch Goldberg Polin, very high profile around the world, probably the most famous hostage today, I would say, globally. And Keith Siegel is also an American citizen. So to showcase two of their American citizens is sending a message to the Americans, especially coming on the heels of Joe Biden meeting with Avigail Idan, that beautiful young child whose parents were murdered, and two brothers saved themselves by hiding in a closet. Just the stories that take you back to the worst of times in the Holocaust. But I think that's obviously all connected. And the other thing that's actually interesting is you're seeing, and you and I had spoken about this on the podcast before, was the Jerusalem Post big, you know, series of articles about Qatar after the editor-in-chief Tzvika Klein had traveled there. We saw over the weekend were two big interviews, one with Haaretz and one with Khan, which is the public broadcaster, with the top advisor to the Emir of Qatar, and them basically saying, we want a deal, kind of putting the blame more on Israel, continuing that line. And I actually saw this morning a strong tweet by Boaz Bismuth, who's a former editor of Yisrael Hayom, the Miriam Adelson-owned newspaper, but now a member of Knesset of Likud, where he said, you should be ashamed of yourselves in the media that you're publishing and giving a platform to this anti-Israel rhetoric. But again, they're a bad actor, but they're an important player in what's happening here. Let people. So that's why I say it's very difficult for any of us to really know who's holding up the deal. Because the Qataris will say one thing, we'll say another thing, Hamas will say one thing. Do you want to believe the American? Who knows? There's so much misinformation here.
I got to say you tend to agree with Boaz on anything, but I'm with him on this. I think that the ethics of giving the Qataris an uncensored microphone in Israeli media is hugely problematic. Interview them, sure, but ask them tough questions. Say that they won't respond. Don't agree to their clearly draconian parameters for the interview, which is what I think happened in all three cases. And I personally think that what the Jerusalem Post did, it was just pure propaganda. It still makes me very angry. That they did that. I know you think it's a good journalist and your pal and all this stuff, and I'm sure it's all true. It was a really poor decision to make. And in my view, it hurt their credibility so deeply. So give them a microphone, but give them a hard time. Treat them like you would anyone else. Treat them like you would let Netanyahu. Okay, so on that note, we're just getting ready to go back into Hag Orama here, which basically means we go off the grid, turn off our phones, not me, but Yaakov does. And we emerge tomorrow night on Monday night, and hopefully we'll learn that a deal has been made.
Wow.
On ridiculous terms.
That would be the Pesach miracle of redemption that I think, without doubt, they need, the hostages. But I think this whole country needs at this point.
I think at this point, bring them home, and then we'll deal with the reckoning and the mess. Because keeping them there is not doing anything positive. It's not a plan. All right, Yaakov, it's always fun, uplifting, certainly eye-opening and mind-opening to talk to you. Appreciate your time as always.
Have a good week.
Have a nice hug, as nice as it can be. And have a good week. Talk to you soon. Thank you.
Thanks so much for listening to this episode of the State of Tel Aviv and Beyond podcast. We'll keep the dispatches coming as frequently as we can. If you like what you're hearing, please take a moment, rate us on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you're listening. You can check out our full library of articles and podcasts at our website, stateoftelaviv.com. State of Tel Aviv is an independent media venture, and we rely on subscribers to support our work. If you are not yet a paying subscriber, please consider taking the plunge today. Each person really does make a huge difference, especially in these very challenging times in Israel. It is important that you stay informed and current and seek out a range of perspectives. This is a pivotal moment in Israeli history. It is not a time to be passive and disengaged. Thanks for sticking with me to the end. I'm Vivian Berkovich, signing off from deep inside the state of Tel Aviv.